Hello and welcome back to the K-Air Prime podcast. My name's Alina Jenkins and in this episode I'm speaking to Yoon Soo Park. Yoon Soo is an educational data scientist and currently serves as department head and professor in the Department of Medical Education at the University of Illinois College of Medicine. He trained at Columbia University, where he earned an MS in Applied Statistics and PhD in Measurement, Evaluation and Statistics. He began his career in the testing and assessment industry, working as an educational and operational statistician. He transitioned to working in the field of medical education research around 12 years ago, where his research is now addressed in two areas, applying validity research to guide innovative educational assessments and developing methodologies in learning analytics. Yoon Soo, welcome.
Thank you so much.
May I ask first, what made you transition from the world of testing and assessment into medical education research?
Sure. Like many others in our field, a lot of it has to do with serendipitous connections that we've made through our pathways. I was very fortunate to meet a mentor in medical education who's guided me toward this pathway. And so that's when I began working in this area about 12 years ago and have been with medical education ever since. So many serendipitous reasons. And also, I've been able to continuously use my background training as a statistician, as a data scientist, and applying it to medical education research, particularly in assessments, and then applying it to data science.
Can I just come back to the mentor? You mentioned a mentor.
Yes.
Who was that?
So the department head who recruited me at the time, Eileen Harris, we met at a coffee shop at a conference, and she somehow thought I could be, you know, converted to do medical education research. And so I left my industry job to go into medical education research. And of course, I've had many other mentors, George Bordage and many others in the department and others who've helped me get my footing in medical education.
Were there any challenges initially when you made that transition?
Yes. So like in many disciplines, I think, you know, you're so focused or grounded in a particular way of thinking. And our field is one where we have so many people from so many diverse communities, backgrounds. You have philosophers, people with literature backgrounds, people like me in statistics, others with psychology background or traditional medical education. We're all working together to do the same types of goals. And so to be able to come out of my comfort zone, I think, is what took some courage and also some mentoring. A lot of it also is the scientific writing and so forth that naturally came in. I think it's an exciting field because we have people from so many different backgrounds.
I was speaking to Sandra earlier, and so she comes from the world of psychology, and of course she's working with Jeff Norman,
yes,
who comes from the world of physics, and you're saying it's just this wonderful sort of melting pot, if you like, of all these different ideas and backgrounds, but everybody's striving for the same goal. So let's move on to that then, I guess, you know, your areas of research. So let's just start with the validity research. Yes. And how you're using that to help with educational assessments. Just tell me more about that.
Sure. So one of the things that I found out as I was starting my journey in medical education was that, you know, of course, we are sometimes having to deal with local data from our institution to do our research. But I soon figured out some of the challenges we had locally at our institution were the same challenges that anywhere else you go in, around the country, and in my case, in the United States, were facing. And so I realized that if I was able to resolve this issue locally, then that will be a solution for many others. And so I've addressed this towards the validity lens, but it's basically the idea to look at local data that can be generalized to other settings, areas that everybody's so concerned about. So it has to also be very timely as well. So it can't be something that's 5 years ago a problem, something that everybody's thinking about right now. Get to it and address it. And then I've used that to create my program of research around those issues in assessment. So for example, at the time, the licensing exam in the United States were just introducing this change. And it was a very minor change, and yet that minor change led to a lot of discussions among medical schools of how we should train the students for that minor change to the licensing exam. So we created this this new assessment to help prepare students for that change. And then that small publication, because everybody were thinking about it, led to 5 more publications and then led to 12. So that just automatically became a program of research. Another area was in education. We do a lot of observations. You know, clinicians observe their trainees, and they observe them for a prolonged period of time. And this is something that people have been doing for probably 50, 60 years. And yet that same assessment that people were assessed or being used to train their trainees, people had a lot of questions about them. They doubted the utility of them because they weren't sure if those observations were meaningful, if they had useful data and so forth. So we began looking at that same problem. Although it was our institution's data, everybody in around the country for the last 50, 60 years were asking the same question, yet there wasn't good literature on it. So we started to publish small papers around it, and it one thing led to another. And so it became another program of research, all sort of stemming around a local problem that was everybody's problem. So that's how I approached that first area of work.
Yeah. It's exciting for you, though, when you, at first glance, you're thinking, well, this is just a small thing, and we'll, and then to see it develop into something so big, that must be really exciting for you.
So it was very exciting in the sense that I came to a field that I had very little background on medical education. But perhaps because I was coming in so new without much knowledge of how doctors were trained or health professionals were trained, so it kind of gave me the eye to question the obvious and find problems that I thought, well, we should just do that problem or let's work on that problem. So that I thought was a useful approach from my end.
So let's move on to the other area of research that you're interested in, and that's developing methodologies in learning analytics. So what's going on there?
Yes. So that's another exciting area that's sort of emerged in the last 7 to 8 years. You know, in many countries around the world, and certainly in the United States, we've accumulated a lot of big data on education, on learner performance. And the surge of data has just been tremendous. And this will probably continue to even be larger into the future as well. The challenge, but also the opportunity, is we've always known how to deal with data when it comes to us in a nice packaged way and the way that we understand it. But then now we have data that's coming out from, you know, AI tools and others that are, you know, just so complicated that prompts us to really think, how do we synthesize this data? How do we summarize it? How do we, well, first, how do we use it for research, of course, but then how do we package it in a way so that we can give it back to our educators so that they can use it for feedback, identify struggling learners earlier on in training and so forth. And so that's been a major project that I've been working on. And I've been very fortunate to partner with national organizations to do some of this work. Part of this work has led to guidelines on how we collect data, how do we report data that uses really large data sets. Some of it is also methodology. For example, you're collecting data from many, many different institutions that have their own idiosyncratic ways of collecting data. And then when learners graduate and they go to the next phase of training or when they go into practice, there's a lot of complexity in the transfer of the data as well. So there's methodology that needs to be developed. And then the whole aspect of analyzing this data and providing the signals that are useful. So how useful are the signals when we connect it using this large data? Is the signal meaningful enough that an educator will want to pay attention to remediate a learner earlier on? So all of those questions are in that second area of research. I think this area actually will continue to grow. And then just a little bit of sort of a personal reflection on my part. So I started my journey as an operational educational statistician. And throughout my journey, I've been trying to re-identify my identity going back as a statistician, as a data scientist. And I think this new era of when we, you know, have AI, machine learning, and large sources of data, it really goes back to the data sources that and the methodologies that perhaps data scientists, computer scientists have maybe developed some time ago and bringing them into medical education, but then also making it our own within our field because of their complexity. So it almost feels like some sense a full circle, but then maybe moving beyond the full circle as well. So that's personally what has been rewarding in that sense with that second area of work.
How do you think AI, you mentioned it, how do you think AI will help or possibly hinder what you're going to be doing in the future?
No, absolutely. So AI, I think, has lots of opportunities. I mean, we talk about many of the challenges, but certainly it facilitates, you know, clinician time in terms of, you know, for example, clinicians or faculty need to spend a lot of time preparing assessments, you know, the new questions, they're very rigorously resource intensive. AI can develop them, you know, within a matter of seconds, new questions. So that's where I think there's a lot of opportunity. And then the second area also is providing feedback. So in the past, when our trainees wrote narratives, essays, or, you know, patient notes that have clinical data that have text narrative context, it took very long time for clinicians to review them, score them, and then give them feedback. But now, you know, machine learning, they can score it instantaneously and then give feedback. So it automates a lot of that process, which is very helpful for us. Of course, there's all of this other worry about it generating responses of its own and so forth. So I think we need to look at the opportunities with AI and machine learning and then try to use it toward our advantage in education.
I'm also fascinated. I come from the world of weather presenting. So we are using models and we have to rely on high quality data. How do you make sure that the data that you're looking at is of the best quality, but also consistent as well?
Oh, that's a very good question, because when it was previous in this nicely packaged data, we had really good tools to look at the rigor and the quality of the data. So we knew how to do that. But now we're having streams of data that's coming in and actually, you know, just such large quantities of data that, yes, we may be able to apply some of the tools, but then we probably need to invent new tools to look at the rigor and the quality of the data. So that's work for people in our community to, I think, figure out. So that will be an opportunity and a challenge into the future. Hopefully, I'm optimistic that the quality of the data will get better and better, so that this work that we are looking at, the data synthesis component, as well as the data collection that's rigorous, both of them go hand in hand so that we can combine them so that we can provide better educational opportunities for our learners.
So what do you see happening next? What would you like to have happen?
So for me personally in my work, I think in some sense, you know, the data surge in education is inevitable. It's going to happen. Everybody sort of knows it's going to happen. And so I think, how do we prepare ourselves to maximize on this, you know, fortunate opportunity that we have? And I think I will be dedicating my work and my resources and my colleagues to help inform us in this area. I think other communities, other academic disciplines are also dealing with similar issues. So it's also a matter of talking with other disciplines, how they're figuring out how to deal with large data. And, you know, I think in 5 years' time, we will be very different in how we're treating data. And by data, you know, I'm not only talking about quantitative data, but also qualitative data, because there's a lot of narrative data that are coming in. And how do we look at both of these? Maybe there could be a new subfield developed within medical education that specifically looks at this. There could also be methodological journals that address some of these issues. So there's probably lots to come. And then for me also personally, I'd like to be able to train, you know, the next generation of scholars so that we have a good team of people looking at this problem, this opportunity together. You know, we don't have that many people who have both an expertise in medical education, data science, AI, machine learning, and all these other areas. So it's also our responsibility to be able to train people who, you know, view this area as their scholarly field.
I wonder if there will be people like you who come from other areas into the world of medical education.
I hope so. I hope to recreate what my mentors had done so that we can continuously bring in people, but also train new people as well, so that there'll be a continuity of people in our field.
We need to dot you and others around in coffee shops so they can have that serendipitous moment. I wanted to ask you what it meant for you to be here in Stockholm as part of the Care Prime Fellows 2023.
It's an extreme honor to be here. I've, you know, many of my colleagues who I've only read about, many of the faculty who I've read about, I'm meeting them for the first time and talking about ideas. For example, Brian Hodges, earlier on in my career when I was just getting started, there was actually a small book chapter that we worked together. I was talking to him on the side. Of course, it was a long time ago, so I had to mention that, you know, that collaboration that we did at that time 12 years ago really affected my career. And then to come back here and then to, I don't know if we've connected or we've certainly spoken to each other during conferences, but not in the time or dedicated fashion that we've had, you know, during this fellowship. And so it's a moment to reconnect some of those earlier connections that I've had and then build new connections as well into the future. There were also another KI fellow colleague who we've written a paper together 7 years ago, but we've never met each other in person. It's one of those electronic manuscripts that we can pass by. So these types of things and just many other connections in terms of disciplinary interests as well that are formed. So I think this will have a lasting impact when I go back and continue on my work, as well as knowing that this community will, you know, help us sort of support our work moving forward as well.
It's been really lovely to speak to you, Yunsu. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to everybody listening at home. We'll be back again very soon with another episode of the KI Prime podcast. Until then, take care. Goodbye.